From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! As many in this country celebrate the playoffs and Columbus Day, we'll hear from Indigenous peoples.
This tradition of dehumanizing Indian people continues in Atlanta, Washington, Kansas City, Cleveland, University of Illinois, Florida State Seminoles, where these fans wear paint, wear bonnets, shake tomahawks, play drums, and chant Hollywood's war chants.
All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. A University of Wyoming student, savagely beaten in an apparent hate crime because he was gay, died early today. Matthew Shepard had been breathing with the aid of a ventilator since being found last Wednesday night, beaten and tied for some 18 hours to a wooden fence where he was left to die. He suffered a severe skull fracture and was burned in the attack. Police said the college student begged for his life. Shepard was found by a passing motorist who at first thought that the figure on a fence post was a scarecrow. He died of his injuries rather than being removed from life support by his parents. NATO positioned itself for airstrikes on Yugoslavia today, preparing to give a pre-attack activation order should talks on Kosovo fail between the U.S. envoy and President Slobodan Milosevic. Ambassadors of the 16-member NATO were meeting in Brussels pending the results of talks between Richard Holbrooke and Milosevic. If the talks fail, the officials in Brussels are expected to vote on an activation order, the last military step before any military strike can be launched. And according to a new declassified internal CIA report, despite requests for information from Congress, the Central Intelligence Agency repeatedly ignored or failed to investigate allegations of drug trafficking by the anti-Sandinista rebels of Nicaragua in the 1980s. In a blunt and often critical report, the CIA's inspector general determined that the agency did not inform Congress of all allegations or information it received indicating that Contra-related organizations or individuals were involved in drug trafficking. Honduran Indians said this weekend they would sentence Christopher Columbus for crimes against Indigenous Americans today, 506 years after his so-called discovery of the continent. Prisoners protested at a jail in East Timor's capital of Dili today as thousands of people took to the streets demanding a referendum on independence from Indonesian rule. Some residents said there were reports prisoners had been shot during the protests. Protesters also took to the streets of the eastern town of Baucau, with thousands of people displaying banners with pictures of jailed resistance leader Xanana Gusmao. Anti-Indonesia protests have flared up in East Timor in recent days, sparked by comments from the Jakarta-appointed governor that civil servants would risk being fired if they opposed Indonesia's proposals on granting autonomy, but not independence, to East Timor. And this news from Nigeria. Protesting youths continue to disrupt oil production today, insisting their political demands must be heeded before ending their blockade of a third of the country's output. The death toll from a weekend of political violence in Lesotho rose to three after two people died overnight in hospital in the Southern African Kingdom, this according to state radio in Lesotho. The radio said a third person was in critical condition, a victim of Sunday's violent feud between government supporters and youth thought to be opposition members at a rally held by the kingdom's prime minister. Three U.S. scientists whose discoveries led to the use of the Viagra anti-impotence drug have won the Nobel Prize for Medicine today. The first war crimes trial of Bosnian Muslims neared its end at the U.N. tribunal today as defense and prosecution made their final submissions ahead of the verdict and possible sentencing. The trial was the first to focus on reports of atrocities against Serbs and the first to tackle command responsibility. Here at home, in a computer at a secret location, the Federal Bureau of Investigation will open a national DNA database tomorrow that advocates say could significantly reduce the incidence of rape and other crimes by helping to catch repeat offenders earlier. The database, with a new generation of forensic DNA techniques, promises to be so efficient that some civil libertarians feel it will be expanded from people convicted of crimes to include almost everyone, giving the government inordinate investigative powers over citizens. The last three bodies of Iranian diplomats believed to have been killed by Afghan Taliban militiamen were flown back home. This according to Iran's official news agency, IRNA. The diplomats were killed by fighters who seized the Iranian consulate and the Afghan city of Mazar-e-Sharif on August 8th, sparking tension between the neighboring states. The bodies of seven other Iranians killed by the militia were repatriated last month. And that's some of the news at this hour. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we reported earlier, Honduran Indians said this weekend they would sentence Christopher Columbus for crimes against indigenous Americans today, 506 years after his so-called discovery of the continent. The Indians in July began a mock trial of Columbus on charges of genocide and robbery resulting from the 1492 beginnings of the colonization of Americas. Some 1,000 Indians blocked access to Mayan ruins and other tourist sites yesterday as part of the protest leading up to Columbus Day. Meanwhile, in the United States, activists around the country hold demonstrations to mark Indigenous Peoples Day. And today on Democracy Now!, we bring you the voices of two Native Americans. In a little while on Democracy Now!, we'll bring you the voice of John Trudell, a well-known activist, one of the founders of the American Indian Movement. He'll talk to you about Native American life today and discrimination. But first, we turn to Charlene Teeters.
My name is Charlene Teeters. I'm a member of the Spokane Tribe in Washington State. I'm currently senior editor, Indian Artist Magazine. So I do this. I'm also professor at the Institute of American Indian Arts. So I get an opportunity to work with young artists, whether they be writers, you know, visual artists, actors, sculptors. And so, you know, art is a very, very powerful way to address some of these issues. And I feel very fortunate that I'm able to meet these people all over the country who are doing things. And in fact, you know, art is really a powerful way to address some of these issues. And I like to use art when I do talks or, you know, whether it be visuals. I don't have any visuals to show to you today, but I have a poem that I really like. The artist is named Christo. And I want to read this poem. One, because it helps me to relax a little bit, so we'll start with this. And it's a poem called I'm Not Your Princess, and it's from a collection of poetry called Not Vanishing. I'm not your princess. Sandpaper between two cultures which tear one another apart. I'm not a means by which you can reach spiritual understanding or even learn to do beadwork. I'm only willing to tell you how to make fry bread. One cup flour, spoon of salt, spoon of baking powder. Stir, add milk, water, or beer until it holds together. Slap each piece into rounds, let rest. Fry in hot grease until golden. This is Indian food. Only if you know that Indian is a government word, which has nothing to do with the names we call ourselves. I won't chant for you. I admit no spirituality to you. I will not sweat with you or ease your guilt with fine turtle tails. I will not wear dancing clothes to read poetry or explain hardly anything. I don't think your attempts to understand us are going to work, so I'd rather you left us in whatever peace we can still scramble up. After all you continue to do, if you send me one more damn flyer about how to heal myself for $300 and special feminist counseling, I'll set fire to something. If you tell me one more time I'm wise, I'll throw up on you. Look at me. See my confusion, loneliness, fear, worrying about all our struggles to keep what little is left for us. Look at my heart, not your fantasies. And please don't ever again tell me about your Cherokee great-great-grandmother. Don't assume I know every other Native American activist in the world personally, or that I even know the names of all tribes, or can pronounce names I've never heard, or that I'm an expert at the peyote stitch. If you ever again tell me how strong I am, I'll lay on the ground and moan so that at last you will see my human weakness. Like your own, I'm not strong. I'm scraped. I'm blessed with life while so many I've known are dead. I have work to do, dishes to wash, a house to clean. There is no magic. See my simple cracked hands which have washed the same things you wash. See my eyes dark with fear in a house by myself late at night. See that to pity me or to adore me are the same. One cup flour, spoon of salt, spoon of baking powder, liquid to hold. Remember, this is my recipe. There is many others. Let me rest here, at least. Yes. Can you hear me okay? Yeah? Over the past 150 years, popular culture has grown into a powerful source of information, selling to Americans and the world a global perception of American thinking. Among those thoughts is a pervasive global image of American Indians. And within that global image, popular media has successfully candy-coated racial attitudes towards Native people. From sports team mascots to tourism, American Indians are things. Things to be examined, things to be sold, things to be entertained by, things to create colorful legends about, things to claim spiritual clemency, things to strike fear with, things to be backdrops, things to be mined. But never full-fledged human beings. To the Boy Scouts of America, Indians are campfire stories or survivalist experts. To New Agers, American Indians are spiritual giants. To the states of New Mexico and Oklahoma, we're tourist attractions. To anthropologists, Indians are objects of study, objects of curiosity. In Germany, Indians are romantic savages. To the University of Illinois, Florida State Seminole, and 141 schools in California. We are slaves for entertainment. These Indians don't exist for me. We are human beings. When you translate our names for ourselves, it translates to mean the human beings. We are the human beings, the original people, the real people. It's hard for us to understand why today we are still talking about, still struggling with this basic issue, the humanity of Indian people. And this is what we're debating. This is what's going on around the country. To quote my friend Michael Haney, he says, the longest undeclared war in history is the war against the American Indian here in our own homeland. History plays an important role in determining whether an act, a term, a phrase, a symbol is racist or not. The history of white America and African Americans is a history of domination and subordination. As long as the dominant society is allowed to define the group, in this case, African Americans, then the old relationships is sustained. The same is true for Native Americans. We have a long and ongoing history of genocide, forced removals, forced assimilation. These symbols that are used across the country, which is used to kill the culture. The process of genocide continues through the use of those symbols, the cultural genocide of the people. Redskin refers to a time when you could make money off of killing Indians. And that was referring to a pelt or a skin. You made so much money by bringing in the bodies of Indian people. And when it was too cumbersome to bring in bodies, you brought in heads. When it was too cumbersome to bring in the heads, you brought in the red skins or the scalp of Indian people. And you got more money if you brought in a scalp that had the ears attached. And they sold many of these pelts to England, and they became part of those wigs that they used to wear, the elite, those powdered wigs. That's where some of our ancestors' scalps went to. The Indian head, not so much unlike what we see, these caricatures, the little red Sambo, were on businesses. And when you saw that decapitated head on the businesses, you knew that was a place you could take your scalp to collect bounty. Your bounty. The tomahawk chop refers to a violent history in America. And sometimes we hear, well, braves, that's not so bad. Braves is a character. But we know that they refer to our men as braves in the same way they refer to African Americans as boy, so that they didn't have to acknowledge that they were human beings. It was a way to refer to them and so that they didn't have to acknowledge they were human. That brave and that squaw. They couldn't say man and woman or husband and wife. They had to find a way to dehumanize us. And chief, how many of you people of color have been called chief? Hey chief, I'll get to you in a minute. It's a way to refer to them as something less than human. I gave a talk in Chicago, and there was an African-American man who stood up, and he says, I finally understand why I keep getting called chief. And he says, because they can't say boy anymore. They can't say nigger anymore. And so they'll say, hey, chief. The school system. These symbols inflict the pain of our history when our school systems use these images. Where these symbols are being played out and played with on primetime television.
using images and icons that are central to our identity. And we can't protect our children from this antics of the fans, because on primetime television, they're turning on the TV and there's the tomahawk chop. There are people playing with the central symbols of our identity. These young people that are up here dancing, you know, it gives me so much hope when I see our young people, and that we have these strong families who are working very hard to instill a sense of pride in our young people and who they are. When we see these young people up here dancing, we know that things will be okay, but it is hard for them. It's hard for these young people that were up here dancing, because every time they turn on that television, they see those things that they've been taught to respect being trivialized, being played with. We have a lot of work to do.
You're listening to Charlene Teeters. She is a member of the Spokane Nation in Washington State. We're going to be back with her and her speech on mascots in the midst of the playoffs leading to the World Series in just a minute here on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!
I've been thinking about how to talk about tea. I've been thinking about how to talk about tea. I've been wondering if I could sing about tea. Trying to find a way to talk about tea.
Talk about tea.
Greed is a poison rising in this land. The soul of the people twisted in its command. It moves like a virus, seeking out everyone. Greed never stops its work, it never ever done. A creeping, choking, killing, invading everywhere. There is really no escaping greed's sneaky snare. I've been thinking about how to talk about greed.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! And on this Columbus Day, a day that some mourn in this country and that some municipalities consider Indigenous Peoples Day, a day when in Honduras there is a mock trial, a trial of Christopher Columbus for genocide, we bring you the speech of Charlene Teeters. Charlene Teeters is a member of the Spokane Nation in Washington State, and she recently addressed an audience in Los Angeles, California, about the issue of mascots.
These symbols that are put forward by educational institutions, which interfere with the true mission of an educational institution, which is to teach history, to tear down stereotypes, not reinforce them. And it creates a hostile environment for our young people who go to school in that 141 schools. When they go, they can't just go to be a student. They're going to be asked, what do you think about this symbol? And then they're going to be treated accordingly. They're either going to be a good Indian or they're going to be a bad Indian. And so they become kind of a litmus test for us. Wilma Mankiller, the former principal chief of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma, came to the University of Illinois to give a talk when I was there as a student. And after her talk, she was asked by the press, what is the number one priority for your nation? And people thought, well, she'll talk about economic development or housing maybe or social programs. And her response to the press was, the number one issue for our nation is to get our young people to believe in themselves again, to trust their own thinking, because our public school systems still teach them today that they have inferior minds. And through the exclusion of Native American history in the curriculum, they're taught that we contributed nothing to American society. that everything Indian is inferior. So our struggle as leadership, tribal leadership, as community leaders, is to get more of our young people through this very hostile environment, the public school system, and hopefully get them through, you know, a college system where, again, their identity is going to be attacked, so that we can be telling our story, so that we can write the history books, write the scripts, stand in front of the classroom and be the professor. We struggle to get more of our people through this very hostile environment. In LA County, during this mascot debate, we heard some incredibly ignorant comments coming from students, coming from community members, coming from administrators, coming from teachers. Ignorance is our biggest enemy. We have to deal with very, very basic issues, very basic questions when Indian issues is brought up. And it speaks to the mass miseducation of America. No college student should go through 4 years of college in this country without taking Native American studies. And if they did, maybe then they would learn to respect the peoples whose land they now occupy. And I ask people about how much Indian education, how much Native American studies did you get during your public school experience? And of course, they think of Indians around Columbus Day. They think of Indians around Thanksgiving, and they usually, it's about putting on paper headdresses and doing this mock Thanksgiving feast. And then they forget about Indians the rest of the year. And when you ask people, how much Native American history did you get? The average person that tells me across the country, they tell me about 2 weeks. You know, if they like crunched it all up to the same time, that's about how much they get. This is the ignorance that I'm talking about, because Americans cannot come to terms with the history, the true history of how Native people have been treated in their own homeland. I have a master's in fine art from the University of Illinois, and I like to refer to it as my master's in Caucasian studies, because everything is taught from their point of view, everything. Our storytellers, who are our educators, tell us that we have been here. Native people have been here since the beginning of human memory. That our people, our bodies, our blood is a greater part of this earth than any other people. So when we walk on this earth, we are walking on the ashes of our ancestors. When you ask the elders, who are we? They will tell you, we are our language. We are our culture. We are our songs. We are our stories. We are our history. We are our names for ourselves. And we are our own images for ourselves. That's who we are. This is what we're protecting. This is what we're passing down to the next generation. If we lose those things that are central to our identity, then we become just another color in this country. We're just another color. Our ancestors, those storytellers, in our language, it translates into the keepers of the sacred truth. That's how important our storytellers are. They are our educators. The last process of genocide is to take the images, the cultural icons of the people being colonized, to reinvent them, distort them, and then impose them on the people as a further way to kill the culture. And this is what is happening today. And this is what this debate is about. It is the last process of genocide. history. History, the presentation of history, is powerful depending on who has it, who holds it in their hand, who controls it. When your enemy has your history in his hand, he will interpret it any way he chooses, and they do. Our history has been held hostage by universities, by museums, by anthropologists, and they interpret it any way they choose. And they will tell you, students who are going in the public school system, that your history and my history is the same. This is what they will tell you. And they will use your history to deflate you. You must learn your history. You must learn your history. Learn who your freedom fighters are, because they don't want you to know their names. They only want you to remember the names of those people who helped the white man colonize America. Learn the names of your freedom fighters. Learn your history, and you must use your history to inspire you. History is very powerful, depending on who holds it in their hands and who controls it. Our history is being used against us by these educational institutions. They are using distorted history, distorted images, to deflate us, to deflate our young people, to deflate our future leadership. In New York recently, maybe you saw it in the news, there was a parade where firefighters and policemen were dressed up in blackface. Did you hear about this? And they were making light of the dragging death of that African-American man in Texas. And these firefighters and policemen were throwing watermelons to the crowd, and they were dragging one of their co-workers behind a truck, and he was blackface. And it outraged the community. But remember, when they were doing that, when they were throwing the watermelons out, when they had their blackface on, there was a crowd there too. And the crowd didn't say anything. They're responsible too for standing back and letting that happen. And as much as that was so horrible that happened today, just about a month ago. But every day in America, on school yards, people are wearing red face, and nobody notices. The same thing is happening. Somewhere in America, somebody is wearing red face. And no one noticed. This tradition of dehumanizing Indian people continues in Atlanta, Washington, Kansas City, Cleveland, University of Illinois, Florida State Seminoles, where these fans wear paint, wear bonnets, shake tomahawks, play drums, and chant Hollywood's war chants. In virtually every public school system in this country, someone is using Indians alongside gophers, bears, beavers. What we have here in California, in the 141 schools, is the local definition of a national problem. It is a national problem. For those people who want to trivialize this issue, they say we have more important issues: poverty, high suicide rate. We know. Because, you know, those aren't statistics to us. They have names attached to them. Those are our relatives. We know. But racism is never trivial. If it stands in the way of a people's self-identification and self-determination, it is an issue for us. When you dehumanize a people, then we're vulnerable to all kinds of acts of racism and violence that we face every day in Indian country. Whose issue is this? It's everybody's issue, everyone's responsibility. If you consider yourself an anti-racist, this is your issue too. To reduce the victims of genocide to a stereotype symbol or mascot is immoral. And as long as this country wants to do this on primetime television, and that this nation's capital has as their identity the Redskins, we continue to be a nation in dishonor. I want to just close with these comments that comes from Alice Walker. Alice Walker said these words after seeing a collection of caricatures and stereotypes of African-American people. And so I'm an artist, and I did an installation of artwork. And so I took her words and just changed it a little bit. And I want to read this. And remember, she's talking about these caricatures and stereotypes. These caricatures and stereotypes are really intended as prisons of image. Inside each desperately grinning Cleveland Indian and stoic Redskin brave or Chief Illiniwek, there is someone we know. If you look hard at these symbols and don't panic, you begin to see the eyes and then the hearts of these despised relatives of ours who have been forced to lock their spirits away from themselves and from us. I see our brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, captured and forced into images they did not devise, doing hard time for all of us. We can liberate them by understanding this and free ourselves. Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlene Teeters. Charlene Teeters is a member of the Spokane Nation in Washington State, speaking recently in Los Angeles, California. And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! On a day that, while many consider it Columbus Day, others celebrate today as Columbus Day. We now turn to, it's rather Indigenous Peoples Day, we now turn to John Trudell, Asante Sioux poet, musician, longtime activist for Native American rights, spokesperson during the Indians of All Tribes occupation of Alcatraz Island in 1969, which culminated in the formation of the American Indian Movement the following year. Trudell was the national chair of AIM from 1973 to 1979. Those turbulent times included the siege at Pine Ridge and the occupation of Wounded Knee. We now turn to John Trudell, who is in the midst of a poem.
There are dreams of the day. There are dreams of the night. Thinking and dreaming are related. Dreams of the day, we make our own. Dreams of night, part of eternal stone. There are dream takers, taking from dream worlds, taking dreams as a way of stealing thoughts, turning minds inside and out. Dream slavers want to change our connections to ourselves, mess with our dreams, make us unsure, unclear about right and wrong, feed our dreams and instincts to industrial profit machine. Difference between dream and fantasy, reality and illusion, center and no center. Dreams of the day keep our spirit alive, our creative mind, who we really are. With dreams we can create and heal, follow our original purpose. Dreams are protection, good medicine, blessed way things. Sun and moon continue. We are all on one journey. Now, kind of, I want to talk about who we are. Now, see, my cultural reality, my life experience in this technologic reality made me a little bit crazy.
You're listening to John Trudell, Native American poet, musician, and activist, and we're going to be back with him and a speech he recently gave in Oakland, California, in just 1 minute on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands, and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! As we go back to Native American poet, musician, and activist John Trudell.
Everything that has ever happened to us, whether it's in our individual contemporary life or our collective tribal life or our genetic memory, everything that has ever happened to us that has been to subdue us or to break our spirit has had, everything that has ever happened has had to do to influence our perception of reality, how we think. Now, the most clear-cut case of it, all right, now see, like when Columbus got here, all right, Columbus got off the boat and he said to the human beings, the people he ran into, he said, "Who are you?" And we said, "We're the human beings," and he didn't know what we meant. Didn't have a clue what we meant. And this is for real. He really didn't. But let's follow Columbus back through the DNA now, back to the descendants of the tribes of Europe. See, the tribes of Europe, they had to deal with the Romans and the Greeks, and who knows who the hell they had to deal with even before that. All right? But they had to deal with these great civilizations that contemporary modern man can remember. See, and that started to alter their tribal things. See, and after these encounters and the gods started surfacing, you know, and they started getting stronger and stronger, all of a sudden the state... Right? I mean, they realized what the role of religion could play, right? Because this goes into all people's perception of their creation story and about the spirit, that whole reality. So they knew that this had to be mind. So there comes a point for the descendants of the tribes of Europe when all of a sudden they got royalty and they got landlords. Landlords. No more Mother Earth. Landlords. And whoever owned the land... The royalty or the landlords, whoever owned the land, owned the descendants of the tribes of Europe. They were just another piece of land. They were another blade of glass, grass. They were another tree. They were another babbling brook. They were owned. So they no longer remembered. They no longer remembered that they were from the descendants of the tribe. They didn't remember that they were tribes anymore, because they were now serfs and peasants, and they had basically no rights. That's what it was. But see, they kind of, in a way, they still had a spiritual relationship to reality, so they still prayed and they followed certain spiritual ways. So by this time, about 1100 AD, sometime about 400 years, for easy math, we're going to use 400 years, all right, before Columbus got over here. The church made the decision that this heathenism could no longer go on, that they need to save the souls now of the property. See, and the church decided, because only by saving the souls of the property, the peasants and the serfs, the descendants of the tribes of Europe, could they get them away from the royalty, from the state. It was over who's going to own the property, who's going to own this natural resource right here that can be mined, who's going to own it. So this became that old thing. So religion and state fought it out. But the church was strong enough because its tie was to business, and its tie was to the creation, which is very important to people, some idea where they come from. See, so that was its... So anyway, they decided they were God's government, God's authority on earth. This was a decision made, right, that they were the authority of God on earth, so literally God's government. And for the descendants of the tribes of Europe, this was the second major alteration of reality. The emergence of the male god way, way, way back, and then this thing that came as the Inquisition. This was the other earthquake. Because what it did was, the position, the line the church drew in the sand was that if you thought differently than the church wanted you to think. You were an agent of sin. Basically, that's what it is. If you thought differently than the church wanted you to think, and it was called heresy. And it was a very precise religious ritual, too, when one looks at religious ritual. The ritual went like this: accusation, which meant guilt, which meant torture, which meant execution, which meant seizure of property. See, and this is when the big deal became up about witches and things, where this was the form the attack took against the women, because that still thing was still there. And they killed me, and they killed as efficiently as they possibly could with the technology that they had. Make no mistake about this. This wasn't any some little, well, isolated case. They were ethnic cleansing, but they were spirit cleansing. This is exactly what they were doing. And what's interesting about it, see, so the descendants of the tribes of Europe, see, now, because remember, this was about possession. The church wanted to possess the souls, right? So anyway, so the descendants of the tribes of Europe, in order to physically stay alive, they had to come to love what they feared, which was possessing them. So love, fear, and possession became pretty much the old thing, huh? You want to talk about a holy trinity? There it is. Love, fear, and possession. Because they're so intermingled that anybody touches any one of them can't think straight. By the time Columbus got here, this had been going on for 20 generations. So literally, the descendants of the tribes of Europe by that time did not know what a human being was. They had no concept of a people. It had been taken out of their memory. It had been taken out of their memory. See, so now this runs along as a mining process in a way, but in another way, it's almost like a disease, because, see, like when Columbus and them got here and they got off the boat, it was obvious that something was wrong with their spirit, and it distorted their perception of reality. And words. Back to some more words here on this mining process. See, I think some words, you know, like, I think all words have power. Because a word is really, in a way, it's something coming out from the inside our thought process. It's an internal feeling, in a way, gets put into sound and sent out into the external vibratory world, like throwing a stone in a pond. Something happens. And what I mean about speaking the language, see, that we don't understand, because, like, believe is one of those words, see. Because I think that believe is such a sacred word, or such a, we'll call it sacred word. It's such a sacred word that one has to be very, very careful how they use the word. Because sometimes I think the word is so sacred that sometimes people say, I believe this, and they no longer think. They no longer think. Oh, they pretend to themselves that they're thinking. But whatever those thoughts are, they're limited and bound by the definition of the belief. All right? So, like, let's look at about belief. Well, I believe I'm all messed up because this is wrong with me, that's wrong with me, and that's wrong with me, and that's wrong with me. All right? And then go out into the world believing that. belief. And it's almost like, in a way, it's almost like, because now we'll go back to the intelligence, the thing that's being mined, how they're mining our being, how they're coming in through our intelligence. And I think it's like, with our intelligence, we should start trying to use our intelligence as intelligently as we can, as often as we can. It's like an exercise. You know, when you wanted to learn how to drive a car, you went and did whatever it was it took to be able to drive that car, or ride a bike, or whatever it is, right? Do what is necessary to learn. And this is all inside our head. But I think it's very important, see, because, again, how we perceive reality and our intelligence. Because our intelligence has been turned against ourselves. That's really what's going on. Turned against ourselves. And granted, whoever we are and whatever we've done, you know, maybe we got some bad stuff hanging there, man. That doesn't mean we're bad people. It just means we got some bad stuff hanging there. Because we probably got some good stuff hanging there, too. See, so we just got to accept that there's a lot of stuff about us. We got a lot of parts to us, and it's a very dangerous. It's very dangerous to wander off into one of the parts and try to make that the whole. It will distort us. It's almost a form of insanity to me. You know, like look at that word, insane. Insane. Right? And I think, well, if insane, then you should be more sane, right? Because you're in it. All right? So maybe in some kind of a way, the insane are the more sane. See, we're just not crazy enough to know it. Crossing the dark side, playing me through time, wetting my edge, I painted myself and what I've done. Sowing the night, seeds of ideas, tending thoughts I wanted to harvest. Riding the dry, the sun was my fever, then I got lost in the thirst. Somewhere in time, in youth, I used to know someone's, but they sort of disappeared, along with some others I never got to mourn. Depending on who's dealing and what the deal is, have to watch what I say. It's what is used to hunt and track me down. Maybe the years buried what I couldn't carry. The reality of the bait is the nature of the trap. And what I couldn't carry waits for me anyway, waiting to be sprung. I'm just a spectator here. Times of transcending time. I should have done what I could, but went and did what I would. Don't be playing games. That'll start me playing too. The way shadows cross the line, I may have played more games than you. In the way angels kiss, we have this time around. Comes down to this, where we're going is how we're bound. The dormant violence of the subtle mind makes the cleanest cut, the hardest cut to find. That part where anger alone can't keep its promises of revenge. It takes the dance with rage to put fire to that page. When the laughing and the living play it down, it plays out to the dying and the crying and whatever is left out. There's got to be a parting thing here about freedom. Because, see, we should always tell ourselves the truth, whatever we do. If we want our intelligence back, we want our reality back, then we should always tell ourselves the truth. No matter what that truth is, we should be real with ourselves, because if we can't be real with ourselves, then how are we going to be real with somebody else? And if we can't be real with somebody else, how are we going to be real to the next generation? So we should always tell ourselves the truth, whether we like those truths or not. Because if we won't do that, everything else is a lie, man. Self-respect, wanting to get better, you know. Because denial can come in many layers and many faces and many rationalizations, but we should always be willing to tell ourselves the truth. And if those truths, if we can't live with those truths, then evolution will evolve it out of us, because we can't live with it. And if we can kind of live with it, then we'll kind of live with it. But we should always be real with ourselves about what we're doing, because otherwise we cannot be real with ourselves about who we are. And every experience we've ever had was to learn from. So we should learn from them and use those, because this is what it's about. See, this is what our ancestors did. They learned from the past so they could have the knowledge to give us now so we could pass it to the future. So as individuals in this reality, we should learn from our experiences and use it to influence the future. So we need to be as clear and as real as we can, though, because this is what gets passed to the next generation. What do we give our descendants? What, we going to try to get them a bunch of money? Yeah, okay. Right? Is there a political system we can trust to leave them? Is there an industrial reality we can trust to leave them? Can we trust the religious reality to leave them? I mean, let's get right down basic, be real here. So there isn't a whole lot we can trust to leave them. But they will come with it. They will bring it with them. We just got to understand it. They bring intelligence, and we have intelligence. And there must be an understanding of that so the next generation will understand the reality of our intelligence so that they can use it much more coherently and clearly than we do. And the thing, but we can't just talk to them about it. Well, yeah, use your brain and think now, right? Because they're going to learn from what they see from us. I mean, how many girls grew up to be like their mothers, right? And no shots being fired. I mean, nothing, right? I just say, you know, I mean, we're just looking for a point of reference here. All right, now what I started out to talk about, though, was this whole idea of freedom, right? Freedom. All right, freedom. Dumb. Freedom. Dumb. Kingdom. Dumb. Spelled wrong, too. Life is about responsibility, and it doesn't have anything to do with freedom. If you want to be free, then be responsible. Life is about responsibility. It was that way in the genetic memory of our ancient past, of our ancestral past. Spiritual reality endures. And it was that way now. No matter what the technologic reality puts in front of us, life is about responsibility. Technologic religious reality have put things in front of us where people want to chase an abstraction of freedom. You know, and really that's a religious term anyway, because the people didn't need their freedom until the dominator God showed up. That's the reality of it. So if we pursue freedom, see, and the beauty of freedom, it has no meaning. And that's how it works. It has no damn meaning. Because if we're going to be real to ourselves, all right, if I have the freedom to do anything I want to do, then that means each and every other individual has the same right. And if they have anywhere, if they have even half the dark sides I have, I don't want them to have that. I'll tell you that right now, right? We'll go by it, well, how's my idea, right? Because we have to lie to ourselves if we say we really support freedom, so we're using a word we don't understand, when in reality, it's about responsibility. See, the racist has a right to be a racist under the definition of freedom that does exist. The Earth Assassin has that right under the definition of freedom. See, that's why we have had all these struggles. And the colonized and the fed upon and the oppressed, see, have struggled for freedom through all these years, see, and never get it. Oh, for the descendants of tribes of Europe, they got to vote for a while. It didn't mean anything, but they got to vote and kill, as long as they killed Indians, right, and dominated the land and took the land away for that ruling class. Then they got to vote and they got to dress how they wanted and they prayed to the one God under the various ways, right? But don't talk about praying to spirit or anything real, because as long as you follow this line, you have freedom. And they have now evolved into a culture and a society where they feel powerless. I think about how I'm doing, but I don't know what I'm thinking. Shattering into shadow light, reflecting thoughts I can't relieve. My heart doesn't hurt anymore, but my soul does. Maybe that's what souls are for, to take the hurt the heart can't take. Distance playing tag, playing tricks with whatever it is I can't find. My weaknesses are my band-aids, covering for how I don't bleed. And all the stones I threw, some were for flinging, some were for bringing, and some I never knew. Living painted into a picture, dripping off all these paintings, the colors of emotions, seeking any kind of devotion. Some things are private between me and the dead, and some of the rest is better off left unsaid.
John Trudell, Santé Sioux poet, musician, and longtime activist for Native American rights. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!